A lot has changed in Wisconsin over the last 10 years, from two seemingly very different governors bookending the decade, to the implementation of Act 10, to the neck-and-neck 2016 general election. Wisconsin has seen a lot of happenings since 2010. And for this conversation, we want to invite you to join in by calling 800-642-1234. What news events have stood out to you the most over the last 10 years? What events impacted your community the most? And what news do you think flew under the radar? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We're joined today by Mike Wagner. He's a professor for the University of Wisconsin-Madison's School of Journalism and Mass Communication. Mike, thanks for joining us on Central Time for the last time in 2019.
Yeah, good to be here.
What a decade it's been.
It's been interesting in a whole host of ways. And yeah, the state, I think, has gone through a lot politically, socially, culturally. Really, as we think about all manner of life in Wisconsin, things are different in a lot of ways, same in others, but many notable things have happened over the course of the last decade.
Well, let's start at close to the beginning of the decade, 9 years ago, the election of Scott Walker.
Right.
What was significant about his election at that time?
I think the election of Governor Walker and the events that happened right after that are probably the defining political moment of the decade in Wisconsin. Governor Walker's election brought with it the passage of Act 10 and ushered in an extraordinarily contentious era of politics in Wisconsin. Some of the research we do at the university's School of Journalism and Mass Communication has shown that maybe a third of Wisconsinites stopped talking to somebody about politics because of Act 10 and their opinions about it. 50% stopped talking altogether with somebody, and 20% said they stopped talking with a family member. They ended a relationship with a friend or family member due to their views that kind of spilled out of the contentiousness that came from Act 10. And of course, there was the recall election that came after that, and a whole host of other contentious things that have happened in the Wisconsin legislature, in extending to after Governor Walker's time in office as well.
Well, let's zero in on Act 10. We'll certainly go back to some other things that happened during Governor Walker's tenure. But Act 10 was the Wisconsin Budget Repair Bill. This is Representative Peter Barka at a meeting of the Joint Committee on Conference, where a version of Act 10 that was taken out of the state budget was approved, clearing the way for it to be passed by the legislature.
This is a violation of law. This is not just a rule. It is the law. There must be. No, Mr. Chairman, this is a violation of the open meetings law. It requires 24, at least 2 hours notice.
What have you done?
Okay. Excuse me.
That was something.
It was, and it was the kind of time in our state's politics where lawmakers would sometimes need an armed escort to get to the dais of cable television talk shows who descended upon Madison when there were all the protests going on in the Capitol around that same time. There were protests over process. There were protests over policy, over the end of collective bargaining on behalf of public employees in Wisconsin, among other things. And it showed the muscle of the Republican Party in the state. It showed it kind of was a signal, I think, of the increasing vitriolic and tense nature of Wisconsin politics that really has waxed and waned a bit, but has not really simmered down overall. It's still a pretty contentious place to practice politics.
There were also some episodes within that Act 10 era that I think very few of us would ever have expected to see. The many, many thousands of protesters descending
right
on the Capitol.
Right.
The Assembly Democrats leaving
the state, right, to try to use the process and the rules to avoid having legislation be able to take place in their absence.
Well, let's listen to the Assembly vote on that budget repair bill that happened in February 2011.
The clerk will close the roll. There are 51 ayes, 17 nays. The bill is passed. Gentlemen for the 69. All in favor say aye. All opposed say nay. The ayes have it. The bill is in the Senate. The Assembly is adjourned.
So that was just about 9 years ago, a little
right
shy of 9 years ago. How strong are the ripple effects of Act 10 still in the state today?
I think they're extraordinarily strong. People still take the feelings they had during that time and apply it to the contemporary politics they see today. I moved to Wisconsin on the day of the recall election. And I remember our neighbors, I live in Madison, and our neighbors telling me you should probably put up a recall Walker sign so that neighbors think that you are on their side. And so we just moved here. We don't even know anything really about Wisconsin politics. But that, you know, that was the intense nature. And there are still recall Walker signs in homes in my neighborhood as I just walk in the neighborhood. So it's something that's stuck with people. It's been a point of pride, I think, for those who passed Act 10 in the legislature and those who supported them. And it's been a rallying cry for liberals, progressives, Wisconsin Democrats ever since.
Well, and just in the last month, I think the UW hospital nurses have been moving to re-energize their union that had been really hampered by Act 10 legislation.
That's happening in professions, I think, across the state. And I think the Evers administration's election, I think, has been part of what spurred that. And there's been a lot of groups who haven't stopped trying to organize since being on the losing side the first time.
We're talking with Mike Wagner right now. He's a professor for the University of Wisconsin-Madison's School of Journalism and Mass Communication. And we are looking back at some of the biggest news stories of the last decade. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Switching gears from the political for a bit to a very sad story, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the mass shooting at the Sikh temple in Oak Creek in 2012. A 40-year-old gunman shot and killed six people, injured four others in what was ultimately deemed to be a domestic terror incident. How did that affect Wisconsin?
Well, I think it in some ways it devastated Wisconsin, and in other ways it was just another day in Wisconsin, which is to say that when mass shootings happen, there's a devastating set of consequences that people who are surrounding that issue are exposed to. And there's this second conversation that begins to happen primarily on social media, where folks who think we need more gun control and need to find ways to lessen the impact of guns in society begin activism for that. And those who say that gun rights need to be extended also begin the conversation. And some work done out of our department led by a grad student named Yinny Zhang showed that when these kinds of mass shootings take place, the conversation about thoughts and prayers and the conversation about concern for people lasts longer when the victims are white. And it also showed that the conversation in the beginning focuses a little bit more on more progressive issues, but the staying power is on the side of the pro-Second Amendment tweeters. And so there's all these different kind of fascinating things happening on social media as the actual devastation of an honest-to-goodness mass shooting happens, just down the road in Oak Creek.
And there have been other mass shootings in Wisconsin in this decade
have.
As well. One of the interesting things I think that came out of the Sikh temple shooting is that the son of one of the people who was killed has joined forces with a former white supremacist, and they are working very closely together, and especially with young people, to try to prevent this kind of violence. And I like to think that that's one of the very positive ripples out of that very sad story.
I think that's true. And I think it's true with a lot of different kinds of sad stories, whether it's, ones related to the horrors of mass shooting events, and also ones related to, say, the opioid crisis in Wisconsin, where Representative Nygren has been a leader in that fight, while at the same time dealing with family issues related to that fight. And so I think a lot of times, the darkest things that happen can generate positive momentum. It's just whether others join in, whether lawmakers join in, whether activists get on board and stay on board, to stay in the conversation in the news, to stay in the conversation on social media, to stay in the conversation between friends and family, to put pressure to bear on folks who make the decisions about what our laws are going to be.
You just mentioned the opioid crisis, and certainly that has really dominated the news for several of the years in this decade. And in January 2015, the Center for Investigative Reporting released a series of reports detailing allegations that the Veterans Affairs Hospital in Toma was overprescribing medications with really disastrous and tragic results, overdoses and deaths of veterans, and of some veterans who sought the care of a particular doctor there who became known as the Candyman.
Where
are we at with this? I mean, this was journalism at its best, really helping some of the most vulnerable people.
It's an example of the kind of work that folks like the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism do, folks here and public media in Wisconsin do, and others that really shine lights on elements of what's happening in our society that people need to know about and put pressure on our decision makers to do something about. And we had the Secretary of the VA come in and say, this kind of thing has to stop. And it's time to put resources in place to make it so places like VA hospitals are not places where these kinds of medications are overprescribed, dangerously prescribed, and given out with impunity and lack of thought to the people that they're giving them to.
And it's also interesting that story came out, at least in the beginning, because of a whistleblower.
Right. As so many investigative stories do, including the impeachment situation we're witnessing now at the federal level, whistleblowers are crucial to investigative journalism and often crucial to the maintenance and success of democracies.
Mike Wagner is with us right now. He's a professor in the UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. And we're talking about the decade of Wisconsin news and how it's shaped us as a state. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What were some of the biggest issues and stories for you in Wisconsin in the past decade? What were some of the stories that you feel like flew under the radar? And what news impacted your community the most? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll continue the conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're continuing our conversation about the news over the past decade that shaped Wisconsin. And our guest is Mike Wagner. He's a professor in UW-Madison's School of Journalism and Mass Communication. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What news do you think impacted Wisconsin the most over the last 10 years? What was the biggest news from your community? And what state news resonated with you the most? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Well, it's hard to even think back a few years, let alone 10 years, but one of the biggest things that happened in the last decade was the 2016 election, President Trump being elected and Wisconsin playing a big role in that. Here's a clip from that election night.
CNN now projects that Donald Trump will carry the state of Wisconsin. He will win Wisconsin with its 10 electoral votes. He's cracked the so-called blue wall that Hillary Clinton had tried to create. Donald Trump wins Wisconsin.
Mike, that was certainly a position that I think a lot of Wisconsinites did not expect to be in, basically calling the election for Donald Trump.
Right. I think Democrats in Wisconsin and nationally had thought Wisconsin was pretty well locked up for Hillary Clinton, so much so that she didn't campaign in Wisconsin during the general election. She came during the primary, was scheduled to come during the general, and I think it was the Orlando nightclub shooting that caused her to cancel her trip to Wisconsin in 2016, or at least the trip she ended up not taking. But it really showed, I think, the nature of politics in Wisconsin and how Governor Walker's roadmap of being able to appeal to voters by letting them know that they can resent particular groups such as, the elites in Madison or people in Milwaukee taking public services, which are kind of hallmarks of the way that Governor Walker would often campaign. Those kinds of things worked for candidate Trump as well, saying he was going to drain the swamp and stick it to those elites and he couldn't be corrupted because he was rich. And some of those arguments played well with some people who voted for Barack Obama. and also voted for Donald Trump. You know, you might recall Obama won rural Wisconsin nearly 2-1, and the same is true for Donald Trump in 2016, 2008 for Obama in that regard. And so we saw this big flip, the first time Wisconsin had gone blue since, I think, Ronald Reagan in 1984. And now we see this state where sometimes, you know, we have a Republican senator, one of the more conservative ones, a Democratic senator, one of the more conservative ones, a squeaker of an election that put Governor Evers in office. And so it's a very close state in terms of who wins statewide elections. And I think we'll see the same thing in 2020.
Well, we also saw that really significant group of Wisconsinites in D.C. with Paul Ryan as Speaker, Reince Priebus, and Governor Walker having been, for a brief time, considered a pretty strong presidential candidate.
He was one of the people who was touted as a front runner early on in the campaign, and for good reason. He'd won a blue state. He'd survived a recall, being the first person ever to do that as a governor in our country, and had done so while aggressively advancing conservative policies, and then kind of flamed out in the election as Donald Trump saturated the media, among other things, during the campaign. But then, of course, as you say, Reince Priebus from Wisconsin, first chief of staff, Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House. Wisconsin was centrally a part of the beginning and in maybe middle of the first term of Donald Trump's presidency.
We're talking with journalism professor Mike Wagner about the biggest Wisconsin news stories of the last decade. You can join in at 800-642-1234. And John in Winona has something to say. Hi, John.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Okay. I live over in Wisconsin, and the dairy farmers, among other the farmers, they're mostly millionaires. They're not rich because they have the dairy cows and the land. That's why they're millionaires. But they're not voting for the Republicans because of the fact that they really took it in the shorts with the foreign policy that the Republican president enacted, and he let the farmers drift in the wind, and they are not voting for him, and he's losing. I think they figured out that there was 5 farmers that went bankrupt every day since he's been in office. So,
and so John pointing to the fact that we have lost a lot of farms in Wisconsin in the last decade.
Family farms, for sure. Corporate farms are a little healthier, I think, than the family farm has been in our state and other states where family farms had been such a crucial part of the state's economy and culture. And it is the case that the family farm has been suffering in Wisconsin. And in the public opinion polling done by the Marquette University Law Poll, we found breaking down people by region, rural Wisconsinites are not over 50% for President Trump. Suburban Wisconsinites strongly in favor of Trump compared to the rest of the state. But rural Wisconsinites, the president is underwater. Now, we should caution, you know, not all people who live in rural areas are farmers. In fact, most aren't. But the idea that farmers will be strong for Trump is certainly not a foregone conclusion, as the caller was pointing out with his own personal experience and as the evidence from recent public opinion polls show.
Thanks for that call, John. And we certainly need to at least touch on the fact that Tony Evers beat Scott Walker in the 2018 election. I don't think a lot of people on either side thought that that was going to happen.
You know, Governor Walker won his election, then survived the recall, won re-election, and, lost in the election that, you know, we might have thought going in he would have been the least vulnerable, perhaps. But I think one thing that happened was Governor Walker ran for president. And when he did, he took a big dip in terms of independent voter support in the state. And while he earned some of that back over the last year of his term, he didn't earn it back to the point he was at before he ran. And in an election that was as close as this one, there are 25 reasonable explanations for why a few thousand votes here or there went one way or another. But I think the one that's the most durable and the hardest to beat down with other evidence is that he did not hold independent support in the way that he had in his other races. And it also, I think, stands that, you know, Governor Evers campaigned as a more independent-minded, let's compromise kind of candidate. That the governing hasn't quite worked out that way in our contentious environment, but that was the nature of the campaign.
Before we wrap up, I think we should give a nod to Wisconsin sports teams. We had a Super Bowl victory from the Packers, and the Bucks have been a lot of fun to watch, one of the best teams in the NBA, and a lot of that is thanks to Giannis Antetokounmpo. What shines about him?
Well, he's just he's an amazing athlete, super fun to watch. And, you know, as is the case with most people who are among the best at what they do, he seems obsessed with getting better. And so I think the knock on him, as far as I know, is his outside shooting, and that seems to be improving. But, I mean, the kind of teammate he appears to be and his athleticism and sense of the game are really, you know, it really makes watching, you know, Milwaukee Bucks basketball fun to do. And, you know, it's also the case, you know, Wisconsin's had a lot of athletic success. I think some Rose Bowls, the women's hockey team, I think, made 8 Frozen Fours. Is that right? And 2 national titles over the decade. So a whole lot of success athletics-wise.
Yeah. Well, it's been a big decade. We're going to look forward to talking with you in the next year, the next 10 years, as long as we can keep you.
I'll do the same. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Mike. And have a very happy new year.
Happy new year to you, too.
Mike Wagner is a professor in UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. He joined us today to talk about the news that shaped Wisconsin over the last 10 years. You can keep the conversation going over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tell us what stories really resonated with you in the last decade, what stories you think kind of flew under the radar, and also, if you have any predictions for what might be happening in Wisconsin in the months and years to come.